mama may have, papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own.
Get up every morning and ignore the global warming. Head out to the Oval Office, start my day. I keep my donors all protected so I can be re-elected. Give them access just as long as they pay. And to the corporate crooks who keep cooking up the books, we make sure we look the other way. The laws are theirs to break, long as I still get my take. My war chest keeps on growing each day. And I've been taking care of business every day, taking care of.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
SBC Communications sends a mixed message to the Communications Workers of America and the 102,000 service and support staff it represents at the company. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, the company says it's reached a tentative agreement with the CWA on health insurance costs for retirees. They will pay a much higher rate for prescription drugs and doctor's visits, but will not have to pay any monthly premium until 2009. The change is expected to save SBC some $400 million. Details of health care costs for the present workforce are not known, and other contentious issues like job security remain under negotiation. In the same filing, SBC also announced a perk for current and retired members of the company's board of directors. Beginning next year, each will receive up to $10,000 in free phone, internet, and satellite TV service per year, tax-free.
Last week, Dick Cheney traveled to Bentonville, Arkansas, home of discount superstore giant Walmart, where the vice president was overheard saying, quote, "Walmart exemplifies some of the very best qualities in our country. Hard work, the spirit of enterprise, fair dealing, and integrity. Walmart pays its hourly employees around $8 per hour and is charged with discrimination in promotions, forcing employees to work unpaid overtime, and fiercely smashing union organizing attempts."
British Columbia is beginning to run low on beer. This is due to a strike, now in its second week, of 300 delivery drivers and other brewery distribution workers moving brew for the Labatt and Molson brands. These two alone account for 90% of the province's beer sales. The main sticking point in the dispute is wages.
With federal changes to overtime protection set to take effect on August 23rd, states are scrambling to grapple with the loss of the 40-hour work week. The regulations issued last month will go into place automatically in 32 states, but not in 18 states. The Department of Labor rule change will cause a net 8 million workers to lose overtime. Even though many union workers will still have overtime pay protections, union officials are worried that time and a half is about to become a bargaining issue rather than a guaranteed right.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to the United Nations International Labor Organization, more people are killed around the world every year on the job than in war. The ILO estimates some 6,000 people a day are killed at work. That's one every 15 seconds. Globally speaking, while 350,000 of the workplace deaths every year are the fault of accidents, five times that number die from chronic exposure to harmful substances, toxins that in many cases domestic labor laws supposedly protect them from.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Corporate advertising is everywhere. I don't mean on radio, TV, billboards, and other commercial spaces. I also don't merely mean that it's in our public schools, yammering at us in elevators, catching us by surprise in our parks and museums, and otherwise intruding into our community spaces. I mean, it's everywhere. I know, you're thinking, Hightower, there you go again with the gross exaggeration. But I'm not exaggerating. You want gross? Meet the latest advertising advance, Whizmark. That's whiz as in take a whiz. Yes, we're talking about male urination and the advertising potential therein. Perhaps you think that I'm going to go on a tear about the little TV screens that many places are now putting above the urinals so you can watch an ad as you, well, whiz. But no, that would be almost civilized. I'm not talking about advertising above the urinals. I'm talking about ads in the urinals. Indeed, ads you whiz on. You know those plastic urinal screens that also deodorize? Whizmark has now accessorized them with ads. Not some bland printed ad, either. Dr. Richard Deutsch, creator of the Whizmark, has brought to us the world's first, are you ready? Interactive urinal communicator. He offers one that has a motion detector. When a gentleman steps forward to do his business, a ring of flashing lights are triggered in the screen, drawing the gentleman's startled attention to your corporate logo, safely protected in the middle of the screen by a waterproof casing. Or if that's too subtle, Whizmark offers a voice and sound model with a microprocessor that shouts ad slogans and corporate jingles at the urinator. Still not tacky enough? Got you covered. Dr. Deutsch has the patent on a radio frequency model that can read your ID card and personally greet you when you step up to the urinal. Hey, Frank, good to see you again. This is Jim Hightower saying, I don't even want to know where the ad hucksters are taking us next.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 year old with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of peace, freedom, and democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way. From coast to coast, this is the Tom Hartman Radio Show. And filling in for the much more intelligent and better looking than I, Tom Hartman, is Rama Schneider. And the Tom Hartman Show, brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-6227. And I don't want to waste a whole lot of time here with little inanities because we've got a really full day. We're going to be doing a lot of bouncing around. First, we're going to take a trip in time back to about 50 years ago today, Brown v. Board of Education. In the second hour, we'll be heading over, take a look at Iraq, and then in the third hour, coming back to the United States. So we're going all over the place, spatially, temporally, you name it, we got it. So we've got a wonderful guest on the phone right now with us, so let's get right to her, Ms. Kimberly West Falcon. How are you doing? Uh-oh, there we go. Miss Falcon. Okay, now, hello, Miss Falcon. I'm sorry, I finally figured out which buttons to push.
Okay, great. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Okay. On the phone with us now, and so that we can hear her, is Ms. Kimberly West Falcon, recently represented applicants to the University of California at Berkeley, subjected to discrimination after the elimination of affirmative action in California. She serves as director and legal counsel of the Western Regional Office of the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, Incorporated, not to be confused with the NAACP, a totally separate organization. Correct, Ms. Falcon?
That's correct, LDF.
Okay, and
our short name.
By the way, how should I should I be calling you Ms. West Falcon, Ms. Falcon, or Kimberly?
Kimberly is just fine. It'll be easier.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So Kimberly manages LDF's Los Angeles office, succeeding former Assistant United States Attorney General for Civil Rights Bill Lan Lee and Los Angeles Civil Rights Attorney Connie Rice. Am I correct there?
That's also correct.
Okay. Now, I got the email they sent. With your bio on it, it has a gazillion laudatory statements. So rather than me spend the next 50 minutes telling everybody how wonderful you are, is there any highlights that you want to let people know so that they'll remember you in a particular way after we're done here?
Well, I think one thing that is unique about what brought me to civil rights law, or at least unique or important to comment on today, the 50th anniversary after Brown versus Board of Education, is that I was actually inspired to become a civil rights lawyer by the Brown litigation and by attorneys like late Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. And I have spent a substantial part of my career litigating education civil rights cases.
Great, great. Okay, and we want to talk, you know, this is, I guess, is it today the 50th anniversary of the 1954 part of the Brown v. Right?
Absolutely. It was May 17th, 1954, so today is the actual anniversary.
And then a year later, the Supreme Court revisited it and came out with some demands as far as what different area, what had to be done legally, is that correct?
Right. There was a Brown 1 and a Brown 2.
Okay.
And the Brown 2 decision set out the concept of how soon the school districts needed to comply with the Brown ruling.
Okay. And now, if you don't mind, Kimberly, I kind of want to start at the present and work our way back to Brown versus Board of Education, because what struck me on doing some reading about it is, how far we still have to go in the issue of eliminating racial disparity when it comes to our education systems. But, there's a lot of advances that have been made along the ways, even though we're not nearly done with this job. And if I can, now you were involved in this, I'm probably going to mispronounce his name, Castaneda versus Regents of the University of California. And you just reached a settlement recently, right?
Yes.
Now, what struck me, I'm reading a press release, and I guess it's from the ACLU. It's an ACLU press release. And what struck me was reading is, I always hear, and this is what I hear on the radio, I hear it on the TV news, and I read it in the papers, that these so-called racial preference programs, they lower the bar for people to get in. You know, we're lowering the bar so somebody can get in because of the color of their skin. But I read this press release here, and just to quote it real quick, in 1998, over 750 African American, Latino, and Filipino American applicants to the University of California with grade point averages of 4.0 or better were denied admission. Now, and white students with 4.0 GPAs, they had a 48.2% chance of admission. That says Latino had 39.7 and African Americans 38.5, Filipino 31.6. So when we talk about some of these affirmative action programs, we're not talking about lowering any bars, really, are we?
Yes, that's a very important component of that lawsuit, and actually we did the case in conjunction with several other organizations, so that's maybe why you see the ACLU name. We did the case, LDF, the ACLU, the Mexican American Legal Defense Fund, the Asian Pacific American Legal Center, and the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, so it was a coalition of civil rights groups, and we came together to file that suit on behalf of clients who were eminently qualified to go to UC Berkeley, and like many aspects of our education system, what's going on in many institutions of higher learning is that you have an overabundance of very qualified kids applying.
Right.
And so it's not a matter of lowering the bar. It's a matter of deciding who gets this very scarce resource. And what was happening at Berkeley and what prompted our clients to want to sue was to say that, you know, no, I'm not saying I'm guaranteed one of those spots because I have a 4.0 GPA, but I should have just as good a chance regardless of my race to get in.
Right. So what was it that was being treated so different with out there in California? If it wasn't the GPAs, what was it that was having the effect of being discriminatory?
Well, there were arguably a bunch, a number of factors, and one factor that cannot be ignored is the fact that you had Prop 209. You had an initiative that the institution was setting out to implement that basically there was an expectation that after Prop 209, we will see fewer faces of color at UC Berkeley.
Right.
And so that was a great concern that because we've come so far, 50 years after Brown versus Board of Education, and, so, and in some ways not in the right direction, there's some idea that we should not overcompensate for black and brown kids. And so it was as if these kids, despite doing all the right things, despite having great grades, extracurricular activities, competitive SAT scores, that they were that their accomplishments were being discounted in some way.
Right. Well, now I know here the press release makes reference to advanced placement courses. They say that certain classes of people didn't have these courses available to them. Was that a part of it?
Yes, we actually did research even before we filed the case to analyze access to certain resources in schools that were predominantly African American, Latino, or Filipino, and found that where you had the higher concentrations of students of color, you had less AP opportunity, is how we described it in,
right.
With the expert we were working with. And what was happening on the end of the institution, Berkeley, is that not only were you given some points or some credit for doing well on the AP course, you're actually given credit for the number of AP courses you took. And so the APs, and that's advanced placement,
right.
Special kind of honors course, the access to AP courses actually put a student at an advantage over a student who didn't have so many courses in their school that they could take. So if you had taken 5 versus 2, you got extra points, but some kids didn't have access to 5 courses.
Huh. So really it had more to do with what they tried to do than what they actually, I mean, they tried to take the courses. They may not have gotten great grades at them, but just trying to take the courses was what was getting them a head start there.
Yeah, it definitely could make a difference.
Okay. Where do we stand? Well, by the way, folks, we're talking to Kimberly West Falcon. She's serves as Director and Legal Counsel for the Western Regional Office of the Legal Defense and Education Fund, Incorporated, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Just to make sure we get it all in there. Where do we stand today, Kimberly, as far as education and availability across the sphere to all kids, regardless of whatever we want to throw out there? Where do we stand today? Is it good, bad, getting better, getting worse?
Well, one thing, because it is such an important day, and it's a day to certainly commemorate how far we've come, it is critical to acknowledge the big change that the Brown v. Board decision made in America.
Right.
It certainly had 2 goals, and it accomplished, both of them in some very important sense. You know, Brown v. Board ended what was a racial caste system in this country with blacks in the bottom caste. So that was a resounding victory for this country, and it has led to equal opportunity, open doors for people, all Americans, regardless of race and, based on gender and based on a number of other factors.
Right.
The second part of Brown is also kind of the public consciousness and the ideal that Brown has given everyone in this country, the idea that we really do support that we should have equal educational opportunity for all. There's no one who disagrees with the ideal of Brown. Now, where we are today is we still have quite a ways to go. And the very good question you're asking is, what have we done and what is this country committed to do to actually make the promise of Brown a reality? And, whether it's the resistance that, followed Brown,
right.
In this country, sometimes violent, the fact that the Supreme Court, didn't really give us the tools to implement Brown for some 10 years and then took them back about 10 years later. So it should be no surprise that there's still so much work to be done after Brown, because there have been many factors in the history of this country and the reaction to what it would actually take to make this country offer equal educational opportunity for all that has put us where we are today. And, to answer your question as far as where we are today, we do have a lot more work to do. There's no question when you go to certain parts of this country, not only is there a lack of access for students of color, there's racial and socioeconomic isolation of students. And it's important that we all agree that it's a goal, but the real work and the commitment that needs to be made today on the 50th anniversary of Brown is to get us to a reality of equal access for all.
Okay. If you folks want to join into the conversation with Kimberly, 1-866-889-8894. I'm sure Louise will let me know if I got that one wrong, too. One of the most astounding facts, I think, and I was actually aware of this before, but it still doesn't fail. Brown versus Board of Education is named actually, it's a coalition of cases that all went to the Supreme Court, correct?
Right. There were five cases in all.
Okay. And I'm going to ask you about them more in detail here in a couple minutes, but, The name Brown came from a gentleman and who sued on behalf of his daughter in Topeka, Kansas. I'm correct there, right?
Yes.
And it wasn't really up until, I can't remember the date, I'm thinking 1997, that Topeka, Kansas was finally forced into taking positive, tangible movement towards desegregating their school system?
You know, I'm not sure of the actual date, but it's absolutely true that in many cases it was quite a while before you saw significant desegregation in different communities.
Okay. Kimberly, can you hold on? We got to stop and take a break here, okay? We'll be right with you. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and community.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
We don't need no thought control.
Oh, dear. All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Show, where I'm a Schneider sitting in for Tom. Hey, teacher, leave those kids alone. That's an inappropriate bumper song, Louise, for especially when we're talking to Ms. Kimberly West Falcon. We're talking about Brown versus Board of Education and other educational issues. Ms. Kimberly West Falcon serves as Director and Legal Counsel for the Western Regional Office of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund Incorporated, not a part. It's separate from the NAACP. And actually, now, the Legal Defense Fund, Kimberly, was Justice, Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall founded it, correct?
Exactly. LDF became independent from the NAACP in 1940, and that's when Thurgood Marshall founded LDF. And so it was LDF and NAACP attorneys that filed the Brown case.
Uh-huh. Now, could we spend a few minutes and, you know, I mean, bearing in mind that we don't want to lawyer people to death because I'll, you know, but... The Brown case, the Brown versus Board of Education was actually made up of four or five different cases that all were put together to go to the Supreme Court at one time. Can you talk real quick about what those cases were and what their commonality was?
Well, they were cases from various parts of the country in that they were not just cases from the South. There was a case out of the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. The Bowling v. Sharp was the name of that case.
Right.
There was a Delaware case. There was the Brown case from Topeka, Kansas, of course, and Davis v. County from Prince Edward County, Virginia, and then Briggs v. Elliott, Clarendon County, South Carolina, is where that case came from. And it's our understanding that the court wanted to choose the Brown case as the lead case for the five because it sent a message that the Brown issue was a national issue, not just a Southern issue.
So the court actually decided which one got the headlines there.
Yes.
So that's interesting. I mean, I have no idea really how that works other than people go up there and argue in front of a bunch of people that sit behind a big bench and then other people come out with decisions and stuff. So do you think that the Brown case itself was the most important of the lot there, or was there others that were more remarkable for reasons?
I don't think it would be appropriate to say that the Brown case was any more important than the others. I think they were all very good examples of the horrible, you know, system that was in place. And what was important about all of them is that they were challenging government-sanctioned discrimination against, in these cases, African Americans. The idea that it is supported and justified by the United States government for a state to say that there will be separate water fountains, separate libraries, and separate schools. And so it was absolutely critical. And what was really visionary on the part of the lawyers who were part of this strategy was that they set up in a 25-year, you know, even longer litigation strategy to, by case, by case, by case, to ultimately challenge the doctrine of separate but equal that the court had endorsed. And so it was a very brave strategy and one that was not a foregone conclusion that they would win. And so it was a very momentous day when the Supreme Court ruled that it would change its, you know, policy up to that point and say that African Americans could not be treated as second-class citizens.
Yeah, and separate but equal. I read somewhere. I think it's in my one of my law legal companion books that I carry around just to make myself look smarter than I really am, that they called it an oxymoronic something or another, that, you know, separate but equal. It just doesn't make sense. And for whatever it's worth to the wild world, I mean, my daughter nowadays, she's 10 years old, and I talk to her about some of these issues, and she just gets the most baffled look in her eyes. Why would people act like this? Why, judging based on what somebody looks like, would you decide how you're going to treat them? You know, I think there's a lot of hope like in that area. Do you find that same sense?
Well, I do. I think there's a lot of hope, and but I think it's also important, and that's why it's wonderful that you're doing this show, to recognize that it's not some distant history in many ways. That, you know, we have individuals who are 50 odd years old, who were students in Prince Edward County, Virginia, who were in school after the Brown decision came down, and Prince Edward County actually closed its schools for 5 years.
Okay, Kimberly, we're at a hard break here.
Must read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
SBC Communications sends a mixed message to the Communications Workers of America and the 102,000 service and support staff it represents at the company. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, the company says it's reached a tentative agreement with the CWA on health insurance costs for retirees. They will pay a much higher rate for prescription drugs and doctor's visits, but will not have to pay any monthly premium until 2009. The change is expected to save SBC some $400 million. Details of health care costs for the present workforce are not known, and other contentious issues like job security remain under negotiation. In the same filing, SBC also announced a perk for current and retired members of the company's board of directors. Beginning next year, each will receive up to $10,000 in free phone, internet, and satellite TV service per year, tax-free.
Last week, Dick Cheney traveled to Bentonville, Arkansas, home of discount superstore giant Walmart, where the vice president was overheard saying, quote, "Walmart exemplifies some of the very best qualities in our country. Hard work, the spirit of enterprise, fair dealing, and integrity. Walmart pays its hourly employees around $8 per hour and is charged with discrimination in promotions, forcing employees to work unpaid overtime, and fiercely smashing union organizing attempts."
British Columbia is beginning to run low on beer. This is due to a strike, now in its second week, of 300 delivery drivers and other brewery distribution workers moving brew for the Labatt and Molson brands. These two alone account for 90% of the province's beer sales. The main sticking point in the dispute is wages.
With federal changes to overtime protection set to take effect on August 23rd, states are scrambling to grapple with the loss of the 40-hour work week. The regulations issued last month will go into place automatically in 32 states, but not in 18 states. The Department of Labor rule change will cause a net 8 million workers to lose overtime. Even though many union workers will still have overtime pay protections, union officials are worried that time and a half is about to become a bargaining issue rather than a guaranteed right.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to the United Nations International Labor Organization, more people are killed around the world every year on the job than in war. The ILO estimates some 6,000 people a day are killed at work. That's one every 15 seconds. Globally speaking, while 350,000 of the workplace deaths every year are the fault of accidents, five times that number die from chronic exposure to harmful substances, toxins that in many cases domestic labor laws supposedly protect them from.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Here they come again. Can't you see if you can?
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. I'm Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom just for today. The Tom Hartman Show is brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-6227. And kind enough to take some time out of her very busy life and help us out with a little bit of educational discussion is Ms. Kimberly West-Falken. She's Director, Legal Counsel of the Western Regional Office of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, Incorporated. This is a separate organization from the NAACP and was founded by the late Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. And once again, thank you very much for joining us today, Kimberly.
Thank you for having me.
I know you're getting kind of short on time, but I want to give you a chance. One last question here before you hang up on me is, what is the most important thing that you can think of for any person to do to help move forward? And as far as this issue of, I guess, racial disparity specifically in education, and what would you say are your most important words to just leave all the fantastically intelligent and wonderful listeners we have out there with?
Well, I would say that it is not enough to support the ideals behind Brown versus Board of Education 50 years later. That it's absolutely critical for us all to support and commit to policies and programs that will make the Brown ideal a reality. So if that means that, as we all should, we hold high standards for students regardless of race, we need to make sure that that standards movement is going to be backed up by giving those students the resources they need to reach those standards, and that we do not punish and penalize kids that have been victimized by not having access to certain resources, and to make them suffer and to lessen their life choices because of what they weren't given on the front end by the schools that they attend.
So we're talking, in some respects at least, we're talking money, correct?
Absolutely.
But it's also more than just money, isn't it? Isn't it like community, family, that sort of thing, too? Is there issues there as far as not getting the local, the one-on-one resources available?
Well, I think we all know enough about education to understand that it is a continuum and it's a holistic process.
Right.
But one thing that we know is consistent for all children, regardless of what happens before they get to the school, that the idea behind this country is that we will educate you as you come and that we will give you an equal shot at the American dream, regardless of your background. And so I think it's very important, again, as we think about what it means to commemorate Brown versus Board, not to view any child's circumstances as something that should limit them, and to see it as what the school's obligation to educate all children, and of course hope that the parents and the community support them and give them the resources they need that they can, but to recognize when we are so close, not very many years away from the types of discrimination that we've been talking about today, that it's not enough to just say, everyone's at the same level right now and we'll move forward from there. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yeah, and I guess I lied there. I said before, two questions ago, last question, but is there a difference in what you see as the needs between the larger inner city schools and the more rural schools? Kimberly?
I think one thing that we definitely know about urban schools is that they have become extremely racially and economically isolated because of, it's been referred to just generally as white flight. But regardless, it's not just white flight. There have just been demographic changes. What we see in our urban centers is, large concentrations of kids, and that, that's a something that's not going to change. And so what all the schools need to do in those types of areas is figure out the best way to give a good and quality education in that environment, because unless we, as a country, commit to making changes in housing segregation, making changes in the way we do policies, it's going to be very hard to have racially diverse educations in that environment.
Right.
And I think in rural areas, you still see the same types of issues. I mean, we saw when we were talking earlier about access to honors courses, those problems were the same throughout different parts of California. On some level, it is, parts of the same problem. But as far as very large schools and concentrations of kids, I do think that there are some differences in the types of schooling you see in urban and rural areas.
Okay. On that note, Kimberly, I want to thank you very, very much for your time. It's been very enlightening, and keep up the good work.
You're quite welcome.
And
thank you.
You have a wonderful day, ma'am.
You too.
I will. Bye-bye. All right. Now, if I can hang in there, I actually managed to hang up the phone there correctly. That was Kimberly West Falcon, director in the Western Regional Office of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, separate from the NAACP itself. And the organization was founded by the late Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. And, of course, today is the 50th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education 1, and then a year later they revisited, the Supreme Court revisited the case and came out and said, look, this is what you guys got to start doing something. And then if you read the history of Brown versus Board of Education, it gets kind of fun, because what happens afterwards is basically everybody tries not to do anything for another couple of decades until we get into the 60s. Then they started doing stuff, and then we got into the 70s. And does that, Boston and its busing, that's the thing that pops into my mind. I mean, why people fuss so much about trying to desegregate schools? But I can remember the Boston busing episodes where they were literally having violent riots going on around the country. And up in Vermont, you know, they talk about how lily white we are up here in Vermont, but it's not entirely true. And I must say, one of the grand things about the school where I sent my daughter very early on in her life, where she went for kindergarten, first grade, second and third grade. Yes, and there was people from many different backgrounds. You know, it wasn't just white and black. It was people from all around the world, all into this very small, very personal school. So she got a lot of exposure to that. 1-866-889-8894. Rama Schneider sitting in here for Mr. Tom Hartman. We're discussing the solutions and not false promises on this show. As Tom likes to say, we're coming at you from the radical middle. And the radical middle, not to be confused with a bunch of wild-eyed, drug-induced fanatics running around in the streets trying to overturn cars after a basketball game or something. We're talking about this radical middle America, the average John and Jane Doe that believes in having health care available to people, having public education available to people, having the ability to go out and get a good job, having a healthy environment, being able to live in a neighborhood where you can walk down the streets without being afraid of being murdered and raped. That's the radical middle, and that's where we're coming from. And if you listen to folks like Ms. West Falcon, and you listen to Tom, and you listen to me try to imitate them, you'll continually hear that over and over, that look, there are certain things that we can do for ourselves, and there's certain things we should be left alone to do or not do for ourselves, but there's also certain things that are big enough. You know, the send a man to the moon type things. How come we never sent a woman? Anyway, we sent a man to the moon. We built the interstates. Liberalism won World War II. Liberalism created the public education system. Liberalism created the United States of America. So that's where we're all coming. And I guess my question for the rest of this hour here is, you can call up anything else you have to discuss. But in recognition of the Brown versus Board of Education, I've got, let me see, this is from BlackPressUSA.com, another Brown community on the mend. The Brown v. Board of Education landmark Supreme Court ruling encompassed five lawsuits. In addition to Topeka, Kansas, the lead case, other suits were pending against school systems in South Carolina, Delaware, the District of Columbia, and Virginia. The strongest resistance to Brown was in Prince Edward County, Virginia. And unlike the school built across town for whites, that's right, for whites, Moton High had no cafeteria, no gymnasium, no infirmary, and no toilets for teachers. Built in 1939 for 189 students, by 1951, more than twice that many students were packed into the facility. Rather than construct a new black high school, the county school board authorized the construction of three large plywood buildings. There you go. This is the sort of stuff, and I don't know. You know, maybe your kids look at you. I don't approve of and I don't appreciate this attitude, but I acknowledge it, and I understand it, but that's the wrong word. I acknowledge its existence. My daughter, thankfully, looks at me when I talk about these sort of disparities where they basically put together a plywood building, cover it with tar paper, no bathrooms, you know, no fresh air, toilets, no gymnasium, no infirmary. You know, if I told her, I said, look, you know, that's where the color kids go. She'd look at me. She'd say, what's wrong with you, Daddy? Why are you feeling so sick and mean today, Daddy? Because thankfully, I mean, maybe we're getting past this generational hump where, you know, it's the memes type thing, this constant passing on down of ideas to people. You know, my parents passed ideas on to me, and all right, so I had to get rid of some of them, okay? Excuse me. And I did with my parents. I had to get rid of a bunch of them. But there were some they passed on that were darn good, and I guess that's where a lot of my progressive or liberalism comes in, as opposed to my sometimes rather libertarian and authoritarian views. You know? How can you be libertarian and authoritarian? It's not hard. I find a way to do that. But this idea that maybe now the kids are starting to hear that you can't. You can't just go on and keep passing these ideas on to kids that, look, that person's got dark skin, they're bad, or that person's got light skin, they're bad, or their eye shape is different, or you name it, whatever it is. So it's, you know, I don't know. In addition, by the way, we're still getting back here to this story from Black Press USA and Prince Edward's County in Virginia. Such courses as world history, Latin, advanced typing, and stenography, wood, metal, and machine shop work and drawing were offered only at the white schools. You know? And now, I think with the Latin stuff, they were doing the kids a favor by dropping the Latin out of there. I took the first half year of the first year of Latin twice, and so far, all I remember is femina, femini, feminarum, feminis, feminas, feminis, and that's the extent of my Latin, anyway. All right, so let's head over to Armin from Florida. Hello, Armin, how you doing?
How you doing?
I'm doing great, man.
Before I get to a serious note, I got a couple jokes for you.
You can tell one joke.
One?
I'm counting. I'm gonna
let me do two quick.
No, you got one joke, or I'll hang up on you.
Why do Republicans have their hands in their pockets?
I don't know why.
Because they're warming them up for yours.
You can tell the second joke. That was good.
Okay. Why do Democrats champion welfare?
Why?
Because early retirement takes too long.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Now, on a serious note.
Yes, sir.
I was watching CBS last night, the latest Charles Manson, you know, rendition, movie, whatever.
Yeah, okay.
And I was sitting there thinking about this guy. So here's a person that, you know, you could debate, you know, and probably most people would agree he was drug crazed.
Charles Manson.
Yes.
Or Bush.
Well, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
And Manson, okay, here he is. He's drug crazed, you know, and abusing drugs, and he has this, in my opinion, a delusional vision of the world.
Now you're starting to sound like you're talking about me here, so.
And then he sends out other people to commit heinous crimes on behalf of his distorted vision.
Right.
and he's now serving his life in prison.
Okay, go ahead. I'm getting a connection here.
And then when you look at George Bush and see the similarities, and you think, Jesus, Lord have mercy, he's in the White House. You know what I'm saying?
He shaved, though, didn't he?
Huh?
He shaved.
Yeah, he shaved a lot of wallets.
Well, let me ask you now, and seriously, and then I'm going to let you go on this, Armin, because I understand what you're saying, and I understand, I think, the parallel you're trying to make here. I don't know if it holds up under too close scrutiny. But do you think that George Bush is this wild-eyed fanatic that's just leading a bunch of sycophants down a path of destruction? I mean, you go down to... what's his name? Jim Jones, et cetera.
Do I think he
is? Yeah, do you think so?
I think he's about half capable in that direction. I think, obviously, in my opinion, the psycho crazies that surround him, you know, direct him.
Okay. All right. You know, that's close enough. Okay.
I don't think it's a good combination for the country or the world.
Yeah. Well, I can't argue with that, Armin. And I want to thank you for the phone call. And thank you for the thought, and the jokes were excellent. Thanks. All right. There we go. Okay. I don't know how to hang up that stupid thing. There we go. I hung up that stupid thing. You know, that's how Tom keeps his job around here, is Louise would have fired Tom a long time ago and hired me, except Tom just makes this board so deliberately confusing with all these buttons to push and sliders to shove around that there's no way this radio program would go smoothly without Tom. That's called
job safety, Rama.
Yeah, I don't blame you at all. All right, coming back, we're coming up on a break here. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Sarin gas in Iraq. We'll take a look at that one when we come back.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
A move is underway to save wild spaces on the high seas. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Over the last century, people have created many parks and reserves to protect scenic areas and the wildlife living in them. But the great majority of those areas are on land. Now many who care about the ocean are calling for more marine protected areas, especially the creation of the first protected areas on the high seas. Sylvia Earle is an oceanographer and an explorer in residence at the National Geographic Society. She says countries around the world have established thousands of national parks and other reserves on the continents, but she says we're lagging behind when it comes to the oceans.
Close to 12% of the land has some form of protection as a park or reserve. In the ocean, it's a fraction of 1%.
Earle says the marine sanctuaries that do exist are mainly in coastal waters. There are no protected wild spaces in the deep ocean. Earle says some parts of the high seas are especially in need of protection. These include underwater mountains, deep sea trenches, and cold water coral reefs. These areas are extremely rich in biodiversity, and the waters above them are key feeding areas for marine mammals, seabirds, and fish. Earle says commercial fishing, oil exploration, and mining in these areas can have a serious impact on ocean wildlife.
If all of the ocean is a source of extraction, there would not be a place for these creatures to reproduce, to feed, to do what it takes to make more of them.
The U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is working with other environmental agencies from around the world to develop a plan for high seas conservation. They hope to establish the first 5 protected areas on the high seas by the year 2008. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
For united we stand, divided we fall. And if our back should ever be against the wall, we'll be together.
Yes, we'll be together, you and I. I'm Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, along with all those wonderful, intelligent people in the chat room. Go to TomHartman.com, click on chat, and you can join this erudite lot of people. They have erudites coming out of their ears. It's like some sort of nasty disease with these people. It's normally we call people like that smart asses. In this case, we'll just leave it at smart. You know what I mean? It's just smart. Okay, conspiracy theories. On the wango in there. Actually, one of those we're going to be talking about is going to be, killings, murders over in Iraq, and who got involved. That's going to come up next. But we got a couple calls, and we got to get through these two calls really fast, because we got a guest coming up at the top of the hour. We're going to be talking about Iraq, very important subject. So first we got Harry from Grand Rapids. Hello, Harry, and you have about I'm going to give you 60 seconds here to get through what you got to do.
Okay, good afternoon. I don't know if you've noticed in the past few days, since all this stuff going on in Iraq, it seems these right-wing talk hosts are falling apart at the seams. They're really getting excited, and they're making up big out-of-the-story fibs. And they sound like a bunch of guys that fell off a boat and thrashing in the water. I don't know if you noticed that they seem to be going wild out there.
Oh, Harry, I agree with you. You sound like a Navy man, huh?
No, I wasn't, no. And then, of course, there's liberal media. I've been searching, and they're always blaming the notorious liberal media. There's very few that I've found, and I've been searching. What do you think about that?
Well, I agree with you, but I tell you, Harry, and I want to thank you for the call. I'm going to let you go here because we do have one other I want to get to. But I look, the media is biased, and it's always been biased, always. And this is something people got to get through their heads. You want to find out, go back and read Benjamin Franklin's autobiography and find out dirty tricks in the media. You know, the media has always been biased. That's why we have to be careful what we believe. Grant from Auburn, Alabama. Hello, Grant. How you doing?
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, sir.
That's good. I wanted to go ahead and comment. I was
You better talk real fast here. You got about 20 seconds.
I'm sorry. I was reading the website, and you had some stuff on here about high school graduates doing a year or two in military service or nonprofit service.
Okay.
And I was just wanting to know if you could amplify on that. I think it's a great idea. I used to be in the military myself, and I think it would help with sort of the stagnant sort of flux of people that you see in the military coming in today.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and hang up and let you comment on that.
Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly, and they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
SBC Communications sends a mixed message to the Communications Workers of America and the 102,000 service and support staff it represents at the company. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, the company says it's reached a tentative agreement with the CWA on health insurance costs for retirees. They will pay a much higher rate for prescription drugs and doctor's visits, but will not have to pay any monthly premium until 2009. The change is expected to save SBC some $400 million. Details of health care costs for the present workforce are not known, and other contentious issues like job security remain under negotiation. In the same filing, SBC also announced a perk for current and retired members of the company's board of directors. Beginning next year, each will receive up to $10,000 in free phone, internet, and satellite TV service per year, tax-free.
Last week, Dick Cheney traveled to Bentonville, Arkansas, home of discount superstore giant Walmart, where the vice president was overheard saying, quote, "Walmart exemplifies some of the very best qualities in our country. Hard work, the spirit of enterprise, fair dealing, and integrity. Walmart pays its hourly employees around $8 per hour and is charged with discrimination in promotions, forcing employees to work unpaid overtime, and fiercely smashing union organizing attempts."
British Columbia is beginning to run low on beer. This is due to a strike, now in its second week, of 300 delivery drivers and other brewery distribution workers moving brew for the Labatt and Molson brands. These two alone account for 90% of the province's beer sales. The main sticking point in the dispute is wages.
With federal changes to overtime protection set to take effect on August 23rd, states are scrambling to grapple with the loss of the 40-hour work week. The regulations issued last month will go into place automatically in 32 states, but not in 18 states. The Department of Labor rule change will cause a net 8 million workers to lose overtime. Even though many union workers will still have overtime pay protections, union officials are worried that time and a half is about to become a bargaining issue rather than a guaranteed right.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to the United Nations International Labor Organization, more people are killed around the world every year on the job than in war. The ILO estimates some 6,000 people a day are killed at work. That's one every 15 seconds. Globally speaking, while 350,000 of the workplace deaths every year are the fault of accidents, five times that number die from chronic exposure to harmful substances, toxins that in many cases domestic labor laws supposedly protect them from.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
I have been to the cross, and I have felt the passion. Not Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion, where viewers get to see a Jesus character beaten to a bloody pulp and then graphically crucified on a cross. No, there's nothing at all holy or redeeming about the cross I have witnessed. It's a political cross, marking the spot in Austin, Texas, where the GOP's diabolical hatchet man, Tom DeLay, beat our state's representative democracy to a pulp. This simple wooden cross, nailed to a telephone pole, is 4 feet high, painted white, and hand-lettered. The cross piece says, Democracy. The centerpiece says, R.I.P., killed by Tom DeLay on this spot. Tom, of course, is the nutball Republican majority leader of the U.S. House, who stormed into the Texas state capitol last year and used the GOP's total control of state government to ram through a grossly partisan, contorted piece of raw gerrymandering that autocratically redraws our state's congressional districts and steals half a dozen seats from the Democrats, a theft that will alter the balance of power in Washington. Austin has long had its own coherent congressional district, logical for a state capital and a community of shared interests. DeLay's power grab, however, fractures our city into three shards of incoherent districts that are dominated by populations far from our borders. Stand in central Austin at 38th and Ronson Streets, where the telephone pole cross was erected, and you are at the epicenter of the fracture. Step in one direction and you're in a district controlled by San Antonio's Republican suburbs. Step in another direction and you're in a district running 300 miles away to the Rio Grande Valley. Step again and you're in a district controlled by Houston's Republican suburbs. This is Jim Hightower saying, a majority of Austinites now have congressional districts without representation. There once was a revolution over that anti-democratic principle.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill six eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to Viagra.com/card. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to Viagra.com/card today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Greetings, patriots, lovers of peace, freedom, and democracy, truth and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman on this wonderful sunny... You know, Tom actually, he said he had to go off to a... No, he didn't go off to a conference. He's up on the beaches of Lake Champlain, drinking champagne and getting a tan while he leaves me here trying to figure out which sliders to slide and push buttons to push and all this other odds and ends. Anyway, the Tom Hartman Radio Show is brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-6227. And right before we left the top of the hour, we got a call from Grant from Auburn, Alabama, about mandatory service for high school, college age kids, etc. And we'll get back to that, Grant. I just right now we have on the phone with us a wonderful guest. We're going to talk about a very important subject, Iraq and all, and issues involving Iraq. So, Grant, we will get to that issue in the third hour, and I will make sure we get time. Even if, you know, we have to run over and interfere with somebody else's show. We don't care. This is the radio show that we just don't care. On the phone with us, though, and we do care about this, is Mr. Marcus Corbin, a senior analyst who rejoined the Center for Defense Information in 2000. Once again, we have this wonderful... Long bio here. 1989 to 1995, Corbin analyzed military issues at the CDI, also available at, you can see him, www.cdi.org, full of great information at that website. But Marcus's portfolio at the center includes military spending and defense industry, as well as Korea, Japan, and current wars around the world. Corbin directed the center's military spending project, which provided policymakers and the public with information about military spending. He's traveled west, east, and southern Africa, career in African economic development work. He's papered his walls with all sorts of degrees and stuff, and I guess at this point I should say hello, Marcus. Well, now at this point I'll say hello, Marcus.
Hi.
Hey, you know, it only took me a minute there. First caller of the day, it took me like 5 minutes to get her on the air. How are you doing, sir?
All right, thanks.
Okay, is there any way that you want to introduce yourself so that you'll be remembered by people after you hang up in a way that you want to be remembered?
Well, perhaps the organization, I can say a word about that. The
sure.
Center for Defense Information is a small think tank that is independent, doesn't take any government or defense industry money, and tries to provide a second opinion on the world events.
And I'm not always going to the site, but I go there quite frequently because even if I'm not looking for something, it's one of those websites that always seems to get some really interesting and, I didn't know that information out to people. So I want to thank you folks for being out there and being so available. The topic, we're going to be talking about Iraq and subjects involving Iraq. So anybody wants to be involved, 1-866-889-8894. That's 866-889-8894. And I guess, Marcus, now, if I can start real quick, have you heard anything about supposedly... some sarin gas being found in a shell over in Syria. I'm looking at a CNN article from just a little bit ago. American-led coalition forces in Iraq found sarin gas in an artillery round that was rigged as an improvised explosive device. And they just mentioned this today, but according to the Fox News site, is it actually was something, an incident that occurred several days ago. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, I've just seen the early reports, and it's important to emphasize how they're early reports. a couple of days may be important there for testing and so on. Presumably they've done some testing to find out what it is, but sometimes the tests aren't conclusive, so they need more testing. So I think it is still early days.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be surprising if they did find a chemical shell, because Saddam supposedly had quite a few of them once.
Yep.
The question is just whether he destroyed all of them, and whether his organizations did, and whether they kept accurate records.
Yeah, and also, like you said before, I could cut off all my fingers and both my thumbs and count on one hand the number of times that these claims have turned out to be anything more than pesticides or something. So
yeah.
So okay. So we'll leave that one aside as take notice, folks, and just be patient. And let's, you know, who knows? Who knows which way it's going to go? Let me get to the one of the really big subjects, of course, involving Iraq, if we could here, Marcus. This involves the treatment of prisoners over in Iraq, and not just in Iraq now. This is becoming where people are looking at Afghanistan, and they're looking at Guantanamo Bay. And hopefully, my preference is that hopefully people will also start to include the domestic prison system in this, but we can skip that for now. But I'm looking at a Newsweek article. Newsweek has learned that U.S. soldiers and CIA operatives could be accused of war crimes. Among the possible charges, homicide involving deaths during interrogations. There's photos that clearly demonstrate a level of prisoner abuse and mistreatment far beyond what was expected, according to GOP Senator Lindsey Graham. Where are we with this whole prison effect? I mean, it seems on one side we get some people saying, well, look, we had to play hardball with these people. These are hardcore criminals. I mean, we even apparently had Rumsfeld and President Bush giving their authority to people to use extraordinary measures against prisoners, especially involved in Al-Qaeda and Taliban. Where are we standing right now? What do we really know about the treatment of prisoners? And let's start with Iraq and maybe work out from there.
Well, I think one thing that's interesting is even if in the cases that have gotten so much attention recently of this abuse, even if that really is shown to be a few people who went much further than they should have done, a few low-ranking soldiers, certainly the administration has created a climate overall in Cuba, Guantanamo, the prison there, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and here at home, where they are at a minimum pushing the envelope of what's acceptable in terms of trying to get information out of suspects.
Right.
I think the president himself has set the entire tone by arguing that he can declare any U.S. citizen an enemy combatant and put them in a military jail and not allow them access to a lawyer or their family or anybody. I mean, that's the extraordinary thing, that this can happen to a U.S. citizen. Forget, you know, foreigners or war zones or suspected guerrillas or terrorists running around the hills of Afghanistan. This is somebody in this country who the president has maintained through his lawyers that he can declare, simply declare, you are an enemy combatant. I'm going to put you in a jail.
Me?
You can't see a lawyer.
What'd I do? I didn't do anything.
And this is the right they are claiming. And that sets a really strong environment for everything else that goes on.
And when they do this, Jose Padilla is a name that jumps to mind, and he's being held somewhere, we think, in Virginia. When they do this, though, they so isolate a prisoner from the rest of the world that they literally have absolute, total, and complete control physically and mentally and emotionally over a person. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, the effects on the person are probably pretty strong. They probably have people interacting with them in a negative way, trying to get information or confessions or whatever out of them. But most importantly, anybody trying to provide legal or other help to that person just can't get through. I mean, without information, our legal system just breaks down.
1-866-889-8894. Marcus, people, you brought up a word. You said a level of acceptable treatment. And I hear two different phrases going around about these various prisoners, wherever they're at. One is what's acceptable, and the other is the Geneva Convention. Now, oftentimes, we're talking about different definitions for these, aren't we? Or am I wrong? Yeah,
between the acceptability and the Geneva Conventions, or just the conventions themselves?
Well, no, I mean between what we describe as the Geneva Conventions and what we say is acceptable. For instance, enemy combatants are, by, according to the President and our Secretary of Defense, fall outside of the realm of the Geneva Convention. So, you know, they get treated in a way now. Do we consider that acceptable and the Geneva Convention acceptable for other people? Are we talking different definitions here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not a legal expert, but my impression is that the administration has put forward the approach that, you know, the Geneva Conventions may not apply here or there, and Secretary Rumsfeld has sort of said, well, the Geneva Conventions don't tell you what to do when you get up in the morning, which I think a lot of people would, lawyers would quibble with, but I think that's the impression. So there is a question as to how much these rules apply, and I think the administration has tried to suggest that they're not absolute rules.
Right.
The problem is, you know, anybody can just see the pictures in Afghanistan and know that's wrong. And it just doesn't seem too plausible that the Geneva Conventions don't apply to that, which is why the administration has so far taken the line that this is unacceptable, and it was just a few low-ranking people, because they really have little choice.
Okay, now, quoting from Seymour Hersh's article that appeared in the New Yorker, I guess, starting today, the roots of the Abu Ghraib prison scandal lie not in the criminal inclinations of a few Army reservists, but in a decision approved last year by Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld to expand a highly secret operation which had been focused on the hunt for al-Qaeda to the interrogation of prisoners in Iraq. We're not just talking about a few specific locations, and when we talk about this abuse of prisoners, we're talking about widespread and systematic actions, whether we call them abuses or not, but it's widespread and systematic, or systemic rather, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the administration is looking at this as at a global fight, and probably appropriately. And we saw the case where the general who was involved with the detentions in Guantanamo, I think he may have headed the
General Miller,
the operations there. Yeah, General Miller was sent to Baghdad to try to change things there.
Marcus, we're coming up on a hard break here, and we got some callers on the line when we come back. Can you hang on?
Yeah.
Great. Rama Schneider for Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right,
We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
We could build thousands of new schools or hire a million new teachers. We could make sure every child has insurance. Instead, under George Bush, America is alone, spending tens of billions to rebuild Iraq with no plan for success. After 3 years, when is George Bush going to start taking care of America? Shouldn't America be a top priority?
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. Join us on the phone is Marcus Corbin, senior analyst with the Center for Disease and Center for Defense Information, available on the web at www.cdi.org. And sometimes, though, I think maybe the way our military goes, it should be the Center for Disease Information. But all that aside, Marcus, once again, thank you for joining us. We have somebody on the phone here, so let's go to Chris from New Mexico. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, Rama. Hello, Mr. Corbin. What I find most interesting about the recent developments, especially with the Seymour Hersh article in the New Yorker, and there are other press reports that are coming out even now concerning the same this copper-green team and apparently the trickle-down effects to Iraqi prisoners. What I find most interesting is the indignant non-denial denials coming out of the Pentagon and Department of Defense. I mean, they have pointedly not denied any of the basic facts in the articles, and merely calling those reports, outrageous and conspiratorial, that seems simply designed to deflect. Is the Pentagon covering its butt on this?
Well, it could be. That's the problem with the security classification system that we have. The government can declare anything a national security secret and not talk about it and go after anybody who does talk about it. And that's, that prevents the public from knowing what's going on.
But at this point, they certainly can't keep it from the Senate, I doubt.
No, although before they could, and that's the problem. My view, broad view, is that the Senate and the House can be a useful tool to a president to have them vet things and protect the president from himself and from his own bureaucracy. You know, there's often an adversarial view and the view that the president has to keep as much information as possible from Congress. I mean, that's what seems to be the history of relations, particularly when it comes to national security matters. But I think, in contrast, it's a missed opportunity. And if Congress really didn't know about this program, I think it's the kind of thing that at least a few of them should have known about.
Okay, Chris.
I hope somebody climbs to the top of it. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the phone call. I want to get onto it. I don't know how much time you have with us, Marcus. Will you have time to sit through another commercial break and spend another?
Sure.
Okay, great. On this whole issue of the treatment of the POWs and what appears, I'm going to say appears, I think I'm being nice by saying that, what appears to be a cover-up as to who authorized what and how much was actually done on the treatment itself. Which is worse in your mind? Let me start from this question. Do you think that the treatment afforded the prisoners in Iraq and Afghanistan, Guantanamo Bay, do you think that's a good or a bad thing, I guess? Let me start from that point.
Well, it's an interesting question just to start with as to whether it's effective or not in strict terms of extracting information.
Right.
And there's a bit of a debate on this. I'm not an expert in these matters, but it's interesting to see that there's a case that it's not even effective.
Yep.
There was an interesting piece I read by somebody who was involved with the detention of Japanese Americans during World War II, or maybe it was Japanese prisoners, I guess Japanese prisoners, and soldiers and so on.
Right.
And they had very good results, not through using pressure and torture and so on.
Yeah.
But so the jury's out probably on that. But beyond that, I think that even if you do get some information, and you might even get some quite useful information, as you use torture, you lose the bigger battle for yourself,
right,
for the nation. I mean, this nation is founded on principles of civil rights and human rights and the power and strength and dignity of the individual. And even if you get something out, you know, you've lost something in exchange. Now, it's a tough call, but I think clearly in this case, when it explodes in your face, it's obvious that there was an overall big setback.
Okay. We have to, Marcus, we got to stop for just a few more minutes, and we'll be right back. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
SBC Communications sends a mixed message to the Communications Workers of America and the 102,000 service and support staff it represents at the company. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, the company says it's reached a tentative agreement with the CWA on health insurance costs for retirees. They will pay a much higher rate for prescription drugs and doctor's visits, but will not have to pay any monthly premium until 2009. The change is expected to save SBC some $400 million. Details of health care costs for the present workforce are not known, and other contentious issues like job security remain under negotiation. In the same filing, SBC also announced a perk for current and retired members of the company's board of directors. Beginning next year, each will receive up to $10,000 in free phone, internet, and satellite TV service per year, tax-free.
Last week, Dick Cheney traveled to Bentonville, Arkansas, home of discount superstore giant Walmart, where the vice president was overheard saying quote, Walmart exemplifies some of the very best qualities in our country. Hard work, the spirit of enterprise, fair dealing, and integrity. Walmart pays its hourly employees around $8 per hour and is charged with discrimination in promotions, forcing employees to work unpaid overtime, and fiercely smashing union organizing attempts.
British Columbia is beginning to run low on beer. This is due to a strike, now in its second week, of 300 delivery drivers and other brewery distribution workers moving brew for the Labatt and Molson brands. These two alone account for 90% of the province's beer sales. The main sticking point in the dispute is wages.
With federal changes to overtime protection set to take effect on August 23rd, states are scrambling to grapple with the loss of the 40-hour work week. The regulations issued last month will go into place automatically in 32 states, but not in 18 states. The Department of Labor rule change will cause a net 8 million workers to lose overtime. Even though many union workers will still have overtime pay protections, union officials are worried that time and a half is about to become a bargaining issue rather than a guaranteed right.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the United Nations International Labor Organization, more people are killed around the world every year on the job than in war. The ILO estimates some 6,000 people a day are killed at work. That's one every 15 seconds. Globally speaking, while 350,000 of the workplace deaths every year are the fault of accidents, five times that number die from chronic exposure to harmful substances, toxins that in many cases domestic labor laws supposedly protect them from.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program. I'm Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom, helping you win the cooler wars. The Tom Hartman radio show is brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-6227. And kind enough to take some time out of his busy day, join us on the phone, Mr. Marcus Corbin, senior analyst with the Center for Defense Information, www.cdi.org on the net. And, you know, if you're just bouncing around looking for just a place to go read some interesting stuff, that's a good site for that. I highly recommend it. And welcome back, Mr. Corbin, and thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Before I guess there's a couple questions I got. One, what do you make about all of this? What's his name there? Nicholas Berg al-Zarqawi thing. And I'll just leave it as a thing right now. What do you make of it? Is there a big conspiracy going on? Is this just your standard radical murder or what?
I don't see much unusual there. You know, it's a question one wonders about the strategy of these people. Do they, because the murder sort of might be thought to toughen our resolve because we recognize what we're up against at a time when the administration was sort of reeling from the prison abuse scandals.
Yeah.
They have a different calculus and may have many other factors in mind.
Yep. Isn't it strange how everybody doesn't think like we do?
Very strange.
I find it totally irrational myself. Another thing, is the U.S. government starting to acknowledge that an Islamic government is acceptable in Iraq?
You mean one that is sort of like Iran,
yeah,
sort of
a theocracy of
repressive
varying,
one?
Well, a theocracy of varying levels, sure.
I haven't seen too much of that, but I don't sort of keep track of what everybody is saying there, so there may well have been some things. I mean, there's definitely been a reduction in our goals, I would say. I mean, if you look back at the whole motivation for the war, I think it was the faction in the administration that really wanted to reshape the Middle East. And the first step of that was to stay in Iraq for years and make sure that it came out with a government that was not just a democracy, but that a democracy that was favorable to the United States.
Right.
In other words, when, you know, in the first days after the occupation, after the invasion, the question was, well, okay, we're there now. We've overthrown Saddam. Let's let them rule their country.
Right.
And set up let's have elections in a couple months or something.
But fooled
that
you.
Was never in the cards.
Looking at Spain, of course, my personal feeling is Spain, the voters didn't react specifically to the bombings of the trains there when they voted in the Labor government. They reacted more to their government's reaction, but that's neither here nor there. But looking at what happened in Spain, in India, we just had what was considered a big upset in the elections, in that the more left leaning parts of their politicians have been elected to the majority in India. Are we seeing some sort of a backlash to this internationalization of business and to I don't know, maybe to what the how the Bush administration is pushing policy around the world?
Yeah, I think that's an element of things. I think the deep difficulties that Prime Minister Tony Blair in England is suffering are very much connected to the war in Iraq and,
right.
and all the sort of shadings and policy decisions and abuses of prisoners that go along with that. Some of the stories about British troops abusing prisoners appear to have been faked,
yep.
but it's brought up this issue about whether there's been others. And in Denmark, the government has been seriously hurt by the lack of weapons of mass destruction and the role their intelligence people played in not saying there weren't weapons of mass destruction there.
Yep.
So I do think there are many cases where specific governments who went along with President Bush are paying a cost.
They're starting to see some price. Marcus, can I just get you to talk to one caller here, and then I'll let you go?
Sure.
Sir, great. I appreciate that. All right. We have Dave from Eureka, California. Come on in, Dave, and what you got?
Hey, you're doing pretty well. You're trying
pretty
to
well.
Get back to follow there. But I'm one who is of the belief that our purpose in Iraq is not by any stretch to be misconstrued as noble, that everything about this present administration is a shifting of wealth from the middle class and the working class into the pockets of the Kellogg Root and Halliburton groups and such. So I don't see that as a good thing by any stretch. I can't imagine why somebody as intelligent as Tony Blair is going along with it. Why, I mean, his own country confronts him very clearly. They don't want to see him, England being a part of this.
Really?
They don't call it a fraud. I do.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dave. And Marcus, any thoughts on that?
I've wondered about that, too, because Tony Blair does come across as very sharp and well-spoken and so on. What I attribute it to, without having done much research on it, is a lack of foreign policy experience, which I think is all the more true in the case of the United States and our president. But I suspect that if you really don't have enough basic grounding in foreign affairs and the views of the world, that then you can start hearing only one side of the story.
Right.
Because people come at you, your own officials and bureaucrats and intelligence agencies
yep.
and so on, can come to you and you start picking the picture that you want to see. And I think that's really been the problem in Iraq. Even people, even specialists in these matters, like Defense Secretary, Deputy Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, who's an academic and knowledgeable person, appears to have just completely misunderstood the feelings and politics and aspirations of the people in Iraq.
It seems like they, my guess, and just being this funky dude up in Vermont, is they just seem to have misunderstood a lot, but that's just my opinion. I'm convinced, Marcus, the only way to solve this is with a new administration and on your way out the door here, and I'll let you go your way, but would you just let us know, what are your thoughts about what can and should be done? I mean, to change the direction of where we're going right now with what appears to be a rather disastrous Iraqi policy at this moment.
Well, I think a lot of people have said we need to internationalize it, whatever that means, and some people have said United Nations or the Security Council of the United Nations, which is a little different. I think what would really count most would be a change in message from the administration. The administration has already asked the UN to try to figure out a future government for Iraq. So it already gave up its distaste for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it hasn't really called the international community together and said, okay, I was wrong on a lot of these things. You guys were right. I'm sorry. Let's work together and get out of this.
Yeah.
And that would just totally change the climate, the feelings internationally about this thing. Because, an apology goes a long way, both in personal matters and in international relations. So I think that would be a good, useful step.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very, very much, Mr. Corbin, for taking some time to help enlighten our world and our days. I mean, sometimes it can be rather scary, and sometimes talking about things, getting a little more information out, gives people a little firmer foundation. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
I certainly appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Marcus Corbin, senior analyst with the Center for Defense Information, 1-866-889-8894. We'll stick with Iraq here for the rest of this hour. There's a lot. This Nicholas Berg beheading, and I guess that's how we'll refer to this. I don't know any delicate way to say it. It's certainly replete with conspiracy opportunity, shall we say. I mean, I don't know how far to take this. You go back with Nicholas Berg. Supposedly he was on a bus several years ago and was sitting next to an associate of Massawi, the Detroit man, the 20th hijacker, so to speak. Lets this guy sitting next to him on the bus use his computer. The guy gets his password to his email, and somehow Massawi ends up with the password to Berg's email and manages to use that. Now, the FBI had talked to Berg, according to everybody, and had cleared him. But then Berg shows up in Iraq, wandering around, apparently with no papers or anything, and acting suspicious. And, then there's a lot of other conspiracy parts to it. I don't know how much credence to give or not to give to it. It's kind of a screwy situation. But I think the thing that we really need to kind of be aware of this is whether or not, let's just say the U.S. government did not set up any, there's no conspiracy. This was just a straight out, terrorist murder to try to scare us into doing something or another. I have no idea what. I want to go back. This is an article from, that was on MSNBC.com, March 2nd. Abu Musab Zarqawi, a Jordanian militant with ties to al-Qaeda, is now blamed for more than 700 terrorist killings in Iraq. Now, remember, this was written, over a month ago now. But NBC News has learned that long before the Bush administration had several chances to wipe out his terrorist operation and perhaps kill Zarqawi himself, but never pulled the trigger. Now, what the article is going to end up talking about, we're going to go into northern Iraq, And I don't know how many you people remember hearing about the chemical weapons factory that was being run by Islamic fundamentalists in northern Iraq. And the Bush administration, the Bushies had brought it out and presented it to everybody. Never went after it. Never bombed it. You know, and we're talking about an area of Iraq that we would call Kurdistan, Iraq. Hussein never had any control up there. And, you know, for whatever reason, the Kurds either didn't have control in that particular area where the Zarqawi was, or they didn't choose to exercise it. We never went after the factory, despite knowing where it was. You know, keep that in mind. This is what we're talking about. In June 2002, U.S. officials say intelligence had revealed that Zarqawi and members of Al-Qaeda had set up a weapons lab at Kirma in northern Iraq, producing deadly ricin and cyanide. Incidentally, to note that supposedly we found ricin in a shell, but once again, let's wait for the tests. The Pentagon quickly drafted plans to attack the camp with cruise missiles and airstrikes and sent it to the White House, where, according to U.S. government sources, the plan was debated to death in the National Security Council. You know, this would be the same council that includes the President Bush, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, National Security Advisor Rice, you know, the people that didn't appreciate that wall between the intelligence gathering and law enforcement activities, you know. Quote, here we had targets, we had opportunities, we had a country willing to support casualties or risk casualties after 9/11, and we still didn't do it, said Michael Ohanian, military analyst with the Brookings Institution. 4 months later, intelligence showed Zarqawi was planning to use ricin in terrorist attacks in Europe. Remember that? That was in Britain. The Pentagon drew up a second strike plan, and the White House again killed it. By then, the administration had set its course for war with Iraq. And in January 2003, the threat turned real. Police in London arrested six terror suspects and discovered a ricin lab connected to the camp in Iraq. That's right. You're hearing me right, folks. The Pentagon drew up still another attack plan, and for the third time, not the first, not the second, the third time, the National Security Council killed it. Let's remember who's on the National Security Council. It's the types like National Security Advisor Rice, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, President Bush. Military officials insist their case for attacking Zarqawi's operation was airtight. But the administration feared destroying the terrorist camp in Iraq could undercut its case for war against Saddam. Oh, hey, you know, I'm laughing because it's so freaking sad. Now we go to Yahoo News, Thursday, May 13th. U.S. intelligence officials have concluded that terrorist leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi was the person shown on the video beheading an American civilian in Iraq, based on an analysis of the voice on the video, a CIA official said Thursday. Now, I take that with a grain of salt. So, let me see now. We have a chance. We have this chemical weapons factory in northern Iraq, and here's President Bush, who has said, we are going to go after anybody who's making weapons of mass destruction or trying to spread weapons of mass destruction around, or who might even use them against us. No problem. Okay. We know where the camp is. We know what they're making. Let's go after them. No, you can't do that. So they come back a second time, the military. Hey, we know where they're at. We know what they're making them. We can go in there and get them. No, can't do that. They come back a third time. No, you can't do that. We need to invade the whole country. We can't take out one lousy camp. Oh, well, the dog that bites you. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel? Satellite?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Large numbers of young people are found to be a destabilizing force in developing countries. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Poverty and scarce resources have long been thought to be the driving forces behind most social unrest, but a new study finds a more important factor, young people. Robert Engelman is a vice president of Population Action International, a nonprofit group that conducted the study.
Those countries were much more inclined to have a higher risk of conflict if they also had high proportions of young people, specifically young men. Societies that had more than about 40% of their adult population in the age group from 15 to 29 were significantly more prone to conflict.
Engelman says that youth bulge becomes even more dangerous when it concentrates in cities.
We also found another connection that we really hadn't anticipated, which was the speed of urban population growth. When urban populations are growing by about 3% or so, which quite a few urban populations are in the developing world, those countries were much more likely to be experiencing conflict.
Engelman says countries like Haiti, Somalia, and Colombia have the most dangerous combinations of risk factors.
And the countries that were most vulnerable to conflict were countries that had all three of these factors working against them. Significant proportions of young people, significant scarcities of either cropland or water, and significantly rapid urban population growth.
The Population Action Study urges international aid programs to target more help for societies with a youth bulge. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Anyway, welcome back. Oh, I want to sing. Can I? No, I'm not going to sing. I love this song. All right. Well, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom, who's, I don't know. I get the feeling he's probably took my motorcycle and is out cruising around the highways right now, you know, getting into those leans, left and right, the breeze going through his hair. I got a pretty cool bike, too. It even sounds good, you know. Which type of motorcycle? It's a Honda 750, but when you get on it, it really sounds masculine. Makes me feel pretty hot stuff when I get on it. All right, enough of that. Nobody really cares, Rama. I know, but I do. I'm looking outside at the sunshine. Secretary of State Powell said that some of the intelligence and evidence of banned weapons that he was fed was deliberately misleading. Secretary Powell, I don't. What can you say? Look, you believed them, okay? And you and the 30 or 40% of hardcore Republicans in the United States believe those words. So I don't. You know, folks, if it weren't for Colin Powell, this is something I honestly believe is true. If it weren't for Colin Powell being put up there as a possible Secretary of State, Bush wouldn't have stood a chance. He would not have gotten elected with a bunch of warmongering freaks like Defense Secretary Rumsfeld and Mr. Wolfowitz, etc. They needed Powell. They needed Powell to put a face of respectability and intelligence and thoughtfulness on that whole campaign in 2000. Remember what a big deal they made? You remember what a big... Oh! So... You know what, Mr. Powell? I am so sick of you running around acting like somebody did something to you. You're supposed to be... You knew better. I have to believe you knew better, you know? So you stop whining. You don't deserve your job anymore because you've decided that it's more important to protect the administration and a cult of personality around President Bush than it is to stand up and go by your oath of loyalty, which was to the Constitution of the United States. So you can stop your whining now, Mr. Powell, because, you know, you decided it was more important, up until now at least, to protect the President of the United States from bad publicity than it was to stand up for what the Constitution says, for the separation of powers, for openness and freedom and everything else that we... Stop your whining, Powell. Go home. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. We're going to be back, brothers and sisters.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's unequalprotection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
SBC Communications sends a mixed message to the Communications Workers of America and the 102,000 service and support staff it represents at the company. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, the company says it's reached a tentative agreement with the CWA on health insurance costs for retirees. They will pay a much higher rate for prescription drugs and doctor's visits, but will not have to pay any monthly premium until 2009. The change is expected to save SBC some $400 million. Details of health care costs for the present workforce are not known, and other contentious issues like job security remain under negotiation. In the same filing, SBC also announced a perk for current and retired members of the company's board of directors. Beginning next year, each will receive up to $10,000 in free phone, internet, and satellite TV service per year, tax-free.
Last week, Dick Cheney traveled to Bentonville, Arkansas, home of discount superstore giant Walmart, where the vice president was overheard saying, quote, "Walmart exemplifies some of the very best qualities in our country. Hard work, the spirit of enterprise, fair dealing, and integrity. Walmart pays its hourly employees around $8 per hour and is charged with discrimination in promotions, forcing employees to work unpaid overtime, and fiercely smashing union organizing attempts."
British Columbia is beginning to run low on beer. This is due to a strike, now in its second week, of 300 delivery drivers and other brewery distribution workers moving brew for the Labatt and Molson brands. These two alone account for 90% of the province's beer sales. The main sticking point in the dispute is wages.
With federal changes to overtime protection set to take effect on August 23rd, states are scrambling to grapple with the loss of the 40-hour work week. The regulations issued last month will go into place automatically in 32 states, but not in 18 states. The Department of Labor rule change will cause a net 8 million workers to lose overtime. Even though many union workers will still have overtime pay protections, union officials are worried that time and a half is about to become a bargaining issue rather than a guaranteed right.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the United Nations International Labor Organization, more people are killed around the world every year on the job than in war. The ILO estimates some 6,000 people a day are killed at work. That's one every 15 seconds. Globally speaking, while 350,000 of the workplace deaths every year are the fault of accidents, five times that number die from chronic exposure to harmful substances, toxins that in many cases domestic labor laws supposedly protect them from.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Corporate advertising is everywhere. I don't mean on radio, TV, billboards, and other commercial spaces. I also don't merely mean that it's in our public schools, yammering at us in elevators, catching us by surprise in our parks and museums, and otherwise intruding into our community spaces. I mean it's everywhere. I know you're thinking, Hightower, there you go again with the gross exaggeration. But I'm not exaggerating. You want gross? Meet the latest advertising advance, Wizmark. That's whiz as in take a whiz. Yes, we're talking about male urination and the advertising potential therein. Perhaps you think that I'm going to go on a tear about the little TV screens that many places are now putting above the urinals so you can watch an ad as you, well, whiz. But no, that would be almost civilized. I'm not talking about advertising above the urinals. I'm talking about ads in the urinals. Indeed, ads you whiz on. You know those plastic urinal screens that also deodorize? Wizmark has now accessorized them with ads. Not some bland printed ad, either. Dr. Richard Deutsch, creator of the Wizmark, has brought to us the world's first, are you ready? Interactive urinal communicator. He offers one that has a motion detector. When a gentleman steps forward to do his business, a ring of flashing lights are triggered in the screen, drawing the gentleman's startled attention to your corporate logo, safely protected in the middle of the screen by a waterproof casing. Or if that's too subtle, Wismark offers a voice and sound model with a microprocessor that shouts ad slogans and corporate jingles at the urinator. Still not tacky enough? Got you covered. Dr. Deutsch has the patent on a radio frequency model that can read your ID card and personally greet you when you step up to the urinal. Hey, Frank, good to see you again. This is Jim Hightower saying, I don't even want to know where the ad hucksters are taking us next.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, good morning. It's Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Greetings to all you patriots, lovers of peace, freedom, democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. And the Tom Hartman Radio Show is, of course, brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-6227. And, the chat room. I got to tell you, folks, if you're on the internet and you haven't gone to the Tom Hartman Radio Show chat room, you failed. You have failed yourself, because these are just fantastic people in there. For instance, Mom Liberated, she writes in the chat room, just sold our home. We had been renting it. And I just wanted to tell Mom that, you know, you're supposed to buy the house before you sell it. You can't sell rented homes. You got it? All right. But what the heck? If it worked for her, it worked for her. Okay. Forget it. I'm not going to buy another home at that rate. I'll just rent them and sell them, turn a clean profit. Seems fair enough to me. But you can get to that chat room anyway, into lots of really fun discussion there. And, of course, they can get into styles of discourse that would probably have Tom find several million dollars if I tried it on the air. Real quick here. Oh, by the way, 1-866-889-8894. You know, I neglected on the Seymour Hersh article, The Gray Zone. This is the one that just came out in the New Yorker and dealing with the Abu Ghraib prison scandal and how President Bush and Defense Secretary Rumsfeld had, they had basically approved the change in status and change in treatment for the prisoners from the top down. So when they say it was just a few bad enlisted people at the bottom, we know what they're full of, and it's not maple syrup. But I was watching Seymour Hersh on Face the Nation yesterday, and he stated very unequivocally, just absolutely stated quite plainly, that if the Senate or Congress started an investigation into the allegations in his article that, you know, the orders for how to treat prisoners essentially came from the very, very top on down, there were high-ranking people who were ready to come forward and testify about these decisions if they were offered adequate protection. And these are people who obviously are worried, because we're talking about the highest levels of the United States government. that are implicated in torture, maltreatment, general abuse of international agreements, and not to mention the United States Constitution. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. All right, well, let's head to the phone here. Roberta from Santa Fe. Hello, Roberta. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Rama. It's good to hear your original self again.
Okay.
And I wanted to make a point, though, that I haven't heard yet on your station, and that is that I think we need to stop calling this a war. It is a genocide. If you look at the trail of blood and tears and inhumanity from the rulers of the globe,
right,
for it extends from Latin America through to this present time, they keep pushing the envelope as long as they can.
Right.
It's the women, the children, that are the obvious targets. There's no discrimination here. The non-combatants are taking the hit, even among the men,
yeah,
in Iraq. And it looks like the sons of Ishmael are going to be wiped out if these fellows, if you can call them that, continue on their present path. And as long as they push the envelope and are not even challenged, I am enraged at the pusillanimous wimps on the Hill.
Okay.
Who are not doing their job to enforce the Constitution. These guys have got carte blanche.
Right. No, I agree with you, and I think that's half of the major failure in our U.S. government, and that's a bipartisan that's something which unfortunately all across Congress they've been willing to do is to let these things go,
but
go.
But you know, Rama, and the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, Section 3, doesn't say, well, if mere opinion deems it wise,
yeah,
then we should remove these government officials. No, it says these government officials must be removed from office.
Yeah, I agree, Roberta, and thank you
very much. It doesn't give opinion any say or way.
No.
It's the duty of them.
Roberta,
no?
you're right 100%, and I can't argue. And thank you very much.
Thank you for giving me the chance to say it.
You betcha. Have a great day, and keep listening. We're not done yet.
You keep on, Rama.
You betcha.
Go.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right. And, you know, she's right. She's right, these people. These people, you know, when you go down to Washington, this is the thing I was saying about Powell just before the top of the hour break. You take these people, when they take their oath of office, their oath is not to defend and protect a certain politician, as right now it seems that most of our government is engaged in doing. The oath of office these people take, and this includes the cabinet members, the president, the vice president, senators, representatives, not to mention all these people in the military, their oath is to the Constitution of the United States of America, to defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So anytime any of these people, literally, just like Roberta couldn't have put it any better, these people are, they're not falling down on their job, they're deliberately walking away from it. Deliberately. My opinion. All right. The Borowitz Report. Wonderful update. U.S. to leave Iraq June 30th, return July 1st. Bush announces Operation Iraqi Refreedom. In his weekly radio address, President George W. Bush announced that if the new Iraqi government asks the United States to leave Iraq on June 30th, it will do so, but added that it will return to Iraq on July 1st, one day later. Mr. Bush expressed his hope that the U.S.'s one-day absence from Iraq would stir nostalgia for the coalition troops and cause a public groundswell of support for their reoccupation of the country. Calling the U.S.'s planned July 1st reinvasion of Iraq Operation Iraqi Refreedom, Mr. Bush said the troops' return to the Middle Eastern nation would give the Iraqi people a unique chance to get it right this time. Last time we invaded, we were not greeted with flowers, said Mr. Bush. There are operators standing by at 1-800-FLOWERS even as I speak. The president also revealed that U.S. forces were currently re-erecting a statue of Saddam Hussein to be re-toppled upon their July 1st return. In other developments in Iraq, Mr. Bush announced that as a goodwill gesture, the U.S. would close Abu Ghraib prison and reopen it as a Walmart. The president pointed out that the prison was an ideal candidate for such a conversion since it already had the facilities necessary to lock in its employees at night, as well as an extensive ladies' underwear department. This is getting disgusting. Mr. Bush concluded his radio address by confirming that he had asked Congress for $25 billion for Iraq and a books-on-tape version of the Geneva Convention. And that's your Borowitz. That's your Borowitz report, folks. I don't know I don't know how else to say it. that's funny. I think, well, you know what? Now, I realize that's supposed to be a humor piece, right, the Borowitz report, but seeing as anything else that the Bush administration has told me, and you too, incidentally, seems to have been kind of diametrically the opposite of reality. I don't know. Hey, by the way, I was telling you about Mom Liberated, who was selling the house that they were renting. Actually, she clarified that. She said they were renting it out to someone else. So if I got this straight, Mom Liberated in the chat room was renting a house, subleased it to somebody else, and then turned around and sold it. So she's making out even better. Now, there's entrepreneurship for you, huh? All right, time to take a look at some of the rest of the news that's heading all around our grand United States of America. And I want to tell you, I can't give up, and there's other things here to go into for a moment, but just bear with me for a moment here. This isn't good to get to any particular topic. As bad and rough as it seems at times, I woke up this morning. I had a bright, cheery, cherubic, or however. I got a lovely little 10-year-old daughter at home, and I got a great wife, and I share my house with some wonderful people, and I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to quit. And, I'll be honest. Let me even just put the whole presidential election aside. Life is never a matter of, wow, we won, isn't it all great? We can stop now. Let's go booze it up for the rest. No, life is never like that under the best of circumstances. So, I'm not going to give up, period. I'm a really annoying person. I ain't going away. You know who else don't go away? Gay couples eager to wed in Bay State, Massachusetts. This is a topic that actually is near and dear to my heart, more because we went through so much of this in Vermont. And 1-866-889-8894, by the way, if you want to chirp in with the news of the day, this is a chance where, this is our chance to wander around the country and see what's going on. These are, some of the issues that matter, some that don't matter. Some are speculation. Maybe even a little gratuitous name calling in there somewhere. I don't know. We'll find room for a little bit of everything. But carting lawn chairs and boxes of heart-shaped cupcakes, purple bouquets of bridal flowers and gigantic candy wedding rings, gay and lesbian couples lined up outside Cambridge City Hall on Sunday evening. Now, isn't that somewhat discriminatory? It's gay and lesbian couples or lesbian and gay couple. Now, how come it's not people that want to get married? How come one gets to be gay and the other has to be a lesbian? How come one group, the guys always get it good, don't they? They get to be happy. They get to be gay. They get to, yay, look at me, I'm happy. The women, they're just lesbians. That seems unfair. Anyway, so as of midnight, Saturday, actually, couples have been able to gather and begin to assemble in the portico of the Romanesque stone building, covering themselves in plastic bags to ward off a morning rain. Oh, boy, they waited. So as of today, same-sex marriage is absolutely legal in the law of the state in Massachusetts. Now, I don't know what the end result, what they'll end up with. I suspect that a year or two down the road, it's going to stay this way. Because that's one thing I discovered about in Vermont. Once people realized that, the gates of hell weren't opening up, we weren't all going to drown in fire and brimstone, that it was okay to treat people as people. You know, I kind of suspect that's what's going to happen. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study in the Journal of Urban Economics found that city dwellers living close to a National Football League franchise pay higher rent and property taxes for that privilege. On average, a resident in an NFL city pays $184 a year, or 8% more than those without a football team. And researchers found total property taxes were about $50 million a year higher.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the TuneTracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the TuneTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original TuneTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Rama Schneider sitting in for the man, the big guy, the big Tom. And, well, hey, we got a couple people on the phone here, so let's stop the dilly-dally and let's get right with it here. Well, it's me. It's me from Santa Fe. Rama, how you doing?
good. How are you?
Hey, it's myself, my alter ego. You know, Rama, if can I say where you used to live and work?
Oh, I used to live in Montpelier, and I worked at the Horn of the Moon restaurant.
I mean, this is so scary, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Rama. He's Rama. I lived in Montpelier also, and actually right now I'm sitting in Montpelier, and he did. Now, I never worked at the Horn of the Moon, but, boy, I used to go there and eat. Great place for food. So, anyway, what can I do for you, sir?
Oh, I just wanted to bring up maybe a topic that doesn't usually get brought up on Tom's show.
All right.
Except on possibly Everything You Know Is Wrong section.
Okay, well, here you go.
I was going to say, what if the real reason we're in Iraq is not oil, but it's about something that doesn't ever really get talked about, but the stargates, the ancient, shall we say, portals to non-ordinary reality worlds, the Anunnaki, Gilgamesh, all the different ancient stories that talk about our galactic brothers and sisters. And this is a subject never gets discussed except on Art Bell or George Nuri, but there is a real seriousness to it, and it's covered up totally.
Oh.
And I just wondered what your opinion might be.
Look, that's one of those subjects, and I've heard that, by the way. I think probably I've heard it listening to George Nori, or who was the gentleman who did the show before him? I can't remember.
Art Bell,
yeah. I think it actually was when Art Bell was still doing it. I don't know. One would like to think that those things aren't true, but then again, there's always somebody like you that pops up with some sort of evidence that I can't disprove.
That's right.
So thank you.
The UFOs over Mexico, our government.
I saw those pictures. Yeah, I saw those pictures. All right, Rama, let me let you go because I got another caller, and then we're going to have a guest on at the start of the next break, okay?
Have a good one.
You too. Thanks so much for calling. Bye-bye.
Namaste.
Yeah. Okay, Preston from Denver, how you doing?
Hi, Rama. I'm doing well.
Great. What can we do for you?
Well, the previous caller brought to mind a book I read recently called Breaking Open the Head.
Oh.
In fact, I think Tom blurbed it on the back.
Really?
Yeah, and it's about visionary plants and, you know, altered states of consciousness and how that's achieved. And we have been kind of warring against that for a long time with the Native Americans. We banned the use of peyote.
Right.
And, you know, in Guatemala, the Mayan Indians use a mushroom. And, you know, the drug war is
the
just
the Rastafarians and marijuana. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And I think our drug war, the war on some drugs, is disrupting that ancient ritual. Meanwhile, we've got Eli Lilly and Novartis selling their drugs.
Yeah.
You know, hand over fist, marketing them very heavily.
Well, and coincidentally enough, I think it was, I was reading an article in the local paper, I don't have it with me, where they're talking about how many more kids are on different types of behavioral drugs now. I mean, it's exploding, and it's not just your ADD stuff, it's antidepressants and manana. If I remember right, it was the ADD drugs have overtaken or almost overtaken antibiotics as the most prescribed drugs for kids.
Yeah, and you know, they're always seeking to expand those markets, and I think that's mostly what the war in Iraq is about, because Iraq and much of the Middle East and other countries have a lot of tariffs and limits on foreign corporations coming into their country and affecting the media, affecting the healthcare system. And
you know, I was feeling so good and safe until Rama and you called.
All right. Check out Hope Magazine. Maybe it'll lift your spirits.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Preston. Sure, appreciate the phone call. All right. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
A must.
Just read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
SBC Communications sends a mixed message to the Communications Workers of America and the 102,000 service and support staff it represents at the company. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, the company says it's reached a tentative agreement with the CWA on health insurance costs for retirees. They will pay a much higher rate for prescription drugs and doctor's visits, but will not have to pay any monthly premium until 2009. The change is expected to save SBC some $400 million. Details of health care costs for the present workforce are not known, and other contentious issues like job security remain under negotiation. In the same filing, SBC also announced a perk for current and retired members of the company's board of directors. Beginning next year, each will receive up to $10,000 in free phone, internet, and satellite TV service per year, tax-free.
Last week, Dick Cheney traveled to Bentonville, Arkansas, home of discount superstore giant Walmart, where the vice president was overheard saying, quote, "Walmart exemplifies some of the very best qualities in our country. Hard work, the spirit of enterprise, fair dealing, and integrity. Walmart pays its hourly employees around $8 per hour and is charged with discrimination in promotions, forcing employees to work unpaid overtime, and fiercely smashing union organizing attempts."
British Columbia is beginning to run low on beer. This is due to a strike, now in its second week, of 300 delivery drivers and other brewery distribution workers moving brew for the Labatt and Molson brands. These two alone account for 90% of the province's beer sales. The main sticking point in the dispute is wages.
With federal changes to overtime protection set to take effect on August 23rd, states are scrambling to grapple with the loss of the 40-hour work week. The regulations issued last month will go into place automatically in 32 states, but not in 18 states. The Department of Labor rule change will cause a net 8 million workers to lose overtime. Even though many union workers will still have overtime pay protections, union officials are worried that time and a half is about to become a bargaining issue rather than a guaranteed right.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the United Nations International Labor Organization, more people are killed around the world every year on the job than in war. The ILO estimates some 6,000 people a day are killed at work. That's one every 15 seconds. Globally speaking, while 350,000 of the workplace deaths every year are the fault of accidents, five times that number die from chronic exposure to harmful substances, toxins that in many cases domestic labor laws supposedly protect them from.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. The Tom Hartman Show is brought to you by Small Dog Electronics at 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-6227. And I'm not so sure we should be listening to what people do at night in their living rooms with the drapes closed. You know, somehow it just seems a little, kind of Peeping Tomish to me. Anyway, welcome back. On the phone with us, we have Mr. Dan Berman, And Dan Berman's a PhD journalist, professor, environmental activist, author of Death on the Job, Occupational Health and Safety Struggles in the U.S., co-author with the late John T. O'Connor of Who Owns the Sun? People, Politics, and the Struggle for a Solar Economy. And here's a good little deal. In his spare time, Mr. Berman is active as a job steward with Local 1000 of the Service Employees International Union and in the worldwide movement to ban asbestos mining and use. And on that note, hello, Mr. Berman. Uh-oh. There I go again. Hello, Mr. Berman.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great when I learn how to push the right button, you know? It's
okay, well,
buttons.
Let's start.
It's this technological world that I live in. It's buttons! Okay, anyway, Mr. Berman's here to talk to us about solar energy for a little bit. And maybe you could just quickly start with telling us what you know about solar energy and what we should know about it.
Well, John O'Connor and I started working on this book, Who Owns the Sun, because we were trying to write about a book about toxics. Then we started noticing that much of the serious pollution in the world was a result of energy production and energy mining and manufacture.
Right.
And so we thought, well, what the clear antidote is solar energy, which for which the fuel is free at the point of delivery, and wind energy. And so we wanted to know what happened to wind. And what happened was the big boys in the energy business, the big dogs, don't
right.
want a kind of energy that that they can't make money off of in an ongoing way.
Yeah, big surprise.
Let me give you an example. My wife and I put some solar panels up on the house, and basically our net usage of electricity is zero because we produce as much as we use.
Okay.
Now so Pacific Gas and Electric gets $4.44 a month from us just for being hooked up to the system so we can turn the lights on in the night, but that's a lot less than they got from us before.
Yeah, I'll bet. And probably pisses them off, doesn't it?
Well, they didn't. The only reason they did it was because there was a movement to make them do it. And before that, they said that they would reimburse people for the solar energy they produced. This is maybe 8 years ago.
Yep.
At the avoided cost rate, maybe 3 cents a kilowatt hour. Now what we're allowed to do is to run our meters backwards. So that means, in effect, we're getting the retail rate, which is about 13 or 14 cents a kilowatt hour.
So by running your meters backwards, what you mean is when you feed power back into the system, is your meter literally runs backwards and subtracts the kilowatts.
And it takes, for about a year or so, it's kind of fun to watch. Because, and so then what happens,
okay,
basically in the sunny times of the year, and we're talking from Northern California, near Sacramento, basically it doesn't really rain very much between April and about October, and so
right.
the amount of energy we generate far exceeds what we use on a daily basis. But of course, when the rains come and the winter comes, and you know, about every 10 years it even snows,
right?
PG&E catches up, and so we start using more than we use, and so we're supposed to pay our electric bill once a year.
Okay.
That's a nice thing we're doing, but we're not saying that we're not saying this is a solution everybody can
right.
deal with at this point, because actually, you know, solar electricity, if without subsidies, is actually still quite expensive. That is solar photovoltaic electricity, which is produced directly from sunlight.
Now let me ask you on that, because I'm kind of curious. I've been hearing about these roofing, I guess I call them roofing tiles, but they're essentially shingles, photovoltaic
yes.
shingles that you can put on your house and just hook the wiring up to them. And those are supposed to be pretty much on par with normal asphalt shingling. Am I incorrect
yes,
on that?
Yes, absolutely. And they work fine. And With those shingles, you basically it's hard for someone to see that you even have a solar panel on your roof.
So in a situation,
it's a good idea.
In a situation like that, though, cost effectiveness goes way up because you're instead of putting on shingles on your house and then your solar panels out back, you're putting shingles and solar panels in one clump on the house. Doesn't that make a difference?
That's true. And the second thing is you're not wasting real estate. You're not putting a huge solar array out on acres and acres of land that might be used for something else, and there's no transmission losses because the electricity is fed right into the grid where it's used.
Right.
So, that makes perfect sense. And so in that case, the shingles replace shingles you'd otherwise have to put on your house. They keep the rain off. They keep the heat out keep the warmth in the winter.
Now,
absolutely.
You live, Mr. We're talking to Dan Berman. He's a journalist, professor, environmental activist, part-time job steward with Local 1000 of the Service Employees International Union, and co-author with The Late, and I guess noting that, John T. O'Connor of Who Owns the Sun? People, Politics, and the Struggle for a Solar Economy. What is the struggle part about? Is it all economics and big business, or is there something else that is making it so hard for us? I mean, solar energy is viable. We know it. We know we can do it fairly easily.
Right.
Well, what's the big struggle?
Well, what we found is when we started looking into the issue of whatever happened to solar energy or wind energy was that privately owned utilities, the oil companies were not in favor, were able to influence the policies of the government and basically turn the entire country away from the sun.
Right.
There was a spurt of national interest in this whole issue under President Jimmy Carter, which was became even stronger on the occasion of the second oil embargo,
right, yep.
when Khomeini took over in Iran,
yep.
And one of the first things that President Reagan did when he took office in 1981 was to take the solar water heating power panels off of the White House
yes.
roof, and secondly,
I remember that
to cut funding for the National Renewable Energy Labs by 90%. And so, because big oil and big coal
yeah.
didn't want to have these kind of challenges, they hated the idea
yeah.
that it was possible to think globally and act locally and produce your own power.
Yeah.
And our argument is that if the national government had followed the recommendations of a Truman administration panel around 1951 or 52 and really pushed to develop solar alternatives, we'd be way farther ahead than we are now.
No.
But instead, the government spent hundreds of billions developing, for example, a nuclear power.
Right.
Billions and billions of dollars every year, maybe $50 or $100 billion a year in subsidies to coal and to oil, including this little war we're having in Iraq, which
right.
By the end of this year will have cost $150 or $200 billion,
right.
And by the end of next year will be up to $500 billion. And of course, that doesn't get added directly onto the price of gasoline. But if it did, the price of gasoline would probably be up there $5 or $8 a gallon.
Yeah, that's what I think.
But someone else is paying for it, or you're paying for it in your taxes. You're paying for it in blood and lives.
Yeah, Dan, do you have a website or someplace where, because you have the book available, do you have a website where people
can
go?
Well, you can find out more about the book if you go to Amazon and just type
okay.
in Who Owns the Sun, and it has the table of contents of the book, and it has the index, and so you can get an idea what's in the book.
Right.
But we make the argument that the problem is not a lack of energy, but it's a lack of democracy, and we argue that if people were allowed to express themselves, that is, if you ask most people, and polls have shown this repeatedly for the last 25 years,
right.
Do you want the government to spend money researching nuclear power? Do you want more nuclear power? Do you want more, or do you want more solar energy? Or do you want more wind energy? They always go for the latter, because after all, the wind is the breath of the sun.
Yep.
So, you know, and we say if, you know, if these, if people did a combination of energy efficiency, conservation, and development of these new energy, new techniques for harvesting the energy from the sun and the wind, and we would be much closer to being able to power our entire civilization on these clean, abundant sources of energy.
Yeah, I got to let you go here in a couple minutes, but you said something just a bit ago that really kind of perked my ears up. You said something about the Truman administration in 1952. What were you referring to there?
There was a federal government report on solar energy, and it recommended that federal standards be set for example, for housing, and that solar water heating be implemented and that kind of thing. But what we did is we found that basically in many countries solar water heaters are totally normal. In Greece and Israel it's code. You have to have solar water heaters when you put a house up. And that's just one little piece of the energy puzzle.
Right, yeah.
But
a million houses.
Pardon me?
At a million houses, it adds up to a pretty big chunk, though.
Right, but I mean, but the point is, this is just an example of the approach. But what instead the government is doing is making it easier to buy these huge cars. If you're a business person and you can deduct directly from your income taxes the price of any car that weighs 3 tons or more. I mean, it's wild.
Yeah.
Just at a point when we're fighting a war over oil, and we should be moving in the other direction and making it more difficult to, we should be, I mean, it sounds simple-minded, but where I live now in Davis, California, just west of Sacramento, bicycle lanes everywhere, and you know, to do my daily business, do shopping and everything else, I don't even have to get in a car. And you know, it's a town that's pretty big, it's 5 miles by 5 miles, maybe 60,000-70,000 people. But they're bike lanes, it's safe.
Yeah.
People are accustomed to seeing people on bicycles. You can do your shopping, you can do your daily business, you can go to the hospital without having to get in a car. There are trains that go directly to the Bay Area and to Sacramento, buses, and so there's a pretty good mass transit system.
Yeah, so if we would just use it. Well, Dan Berman, PhD, journalist, professor, environmental activist, co-author with the late John T. O'Connor of Who Owns the Sun? People, Politics, and the Struggle for a Solar Economy. And people can get more information about that particular book at Amazon.com. I want to thank you very much for spending some
thank
time with
very
us.
Thank you very much.
And you have a wonderful day, sir.
Thank you very much, Ram.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. All right, 1-866-889-8894. You know, that is what he points out. I think is probably the such a truism, though. You know, it's these. We could do a little bit of this. If you put these solar hot water preheaters, essentially is what it really is, on top of your house, you replace your shingles with photovoltaic shingles. You know, even up here in Vermont, we could generate a fair amount of our electricity or save energy usage by doing those things. And it's not supposed to just replace everything. But it would be a step down the way to replace stuff, yeah, you know? Hey, how about this? U.S. using 1872 law to prosecute Greenpeace. Apparently Greenpeace has been going on to boats and dragging the sailors off boats to force prostitutes and stuff on them and drag them into bars and things. Because... Let me just read from the article here a bit. When the wave-tossed Greenpeace activists boarded a container ship off Miami Beach 2 years ago, they didn't know it could lead to prosecution under a 132-year-old law aimed at keeping boarding houses from luring sailors to shore. And in a tactic the group has often used to make a point, the activists attempted to unfurl a large banner on the ship to protest what they saw as the Bush administration's inaction on a ban on Amazon mahogany imports. They promptly were charged by the wonderful, freedom-loving Bush administration and our wonderful General Ashcroft with sailor mongering, you know? So, according to Ashcroft, can't tell the difference between somebody doing an environmental protest and trying to lure somebody into a house of ill repute. So, maybe Karen from Santa Fe can tell us the difference. Hi, Karen.
Well, I don't know if I can tell you the difference about that, but I did want to respond to the guest that was on there. I thought maybe he was going to take some questions.
Okay. Well, yeah, he couldn't stay that long.
Yeah. Really interesting, though. Well, I had some questions about the weather modification programs that are out there now.
No.
And I came across something that Air Force is planning owning the weather by 2025 as their goal. And, you know, that kind of fits in with if the oil is going to be, you know, going away. If somebody can, you know, determine whether we get sun or rain, then there would be a way that they could make money on solar and wind power.
All right. I got to let you go. I got to let you go, Karen. Thank you. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores? Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
A move is underway to save wild spaces on the high seas. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Over the last century, people have created many parks and reserves to protect scenic areas and the wildlife living in them. But the great majority of those areas are on land. Now many who care about the ocean are calling for more marine protected areas, especially the creation of the first protected areas on the high seas. Sylvia Earle is an oceanographer and an explorer in residence at the National Geographic Society. She says countries around the world have established thousands of national parks and other reserves on the continents, but she says we're lagging behind when it comes to the oceans.
Close to 12% of the land has some form of protection as a park or reserve. In the ocean, it's a fraction of 1%.
Earl says the marine sanctuaries that do exist are mainly in coastal waters. There are no protected wild spaces in the deep ocean. Earl says some parts of the high seas are especially in need of protection. These include underwater mountains, deep-sea trenches, and cold-water coral reefs. These areas are extremely rich in biodiversity, and the waters above them are key feeding areas for marine mammals, seabirds, and fish. Earl says commercial fishing, oil exploration, and mining in these areas can have a serious impact on ocean wildlife.
If all of the ocean is a source of extraction, there would not be a place for these creatures to reproduce, to feed, to do what it takes to make more of them.
The U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is working with other environmental agencies from around the world to develop a plan for high seas conservation. They hope to establish the first 5 protected areas on the high seas by the year 2008. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
All right. By the time we got to Woodstock, we were Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Show. And just wrapping up here with a few more minutes. From the Washington Post, leaked prosecutor seeks to question reporters. A special prosecutor investigating whether administration officials illegally leaked the name of an undercover CIA operative sought yesterday to interview 2 Washington Post reporters in connection with the probe. They're starting to really dig into this Valerie Plame outing thing. And I think, don't mess with the intelligence agencies. You know, I'm telling you, this is going to be the downfall of the Bush administration. It's going to be the downfall not only through this plane thing, through the Iraqi WMD misleading, and this whole bit about treating prisoners and how they treat prisoners and who told what who. This is the sort of stuff. Don't mess with that part of the government. They'll come and get you. They're not afraid of you. This is the group, this intelligence agencies, you know, they're the people, they have the eye, they have the ears, rather, of Congress. All right, Janet Jackson Redux. I'm not going to go into it too far. Go to the Drudge Report or go to Yahoo News. Alexandra Kerry, 30-year-old daughter of U.S. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry, walked up Kane's celebrated red carpet for the premiere of Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill 2, wearing an off-shoulder black number that it turned transparent under the flashes. And if you look at the news photo, it turned transparent under the flashes. So either you want to know what the latest brahoo-hoo, hoo-ha-ha-ha-ha from the radical right will be about how horrible Kerry is, or you just want to see what a good-looking woman looks like, go to either the Drudge Report or the AFP or Yahoo News or whatever. And that's sure to be all over the news by the time you go to bed tonight. Here's one that really irritates me. I wish I was a well-connected politician. Bill Janklow, right? Former U.S. representative from South Dakota, ran through a stop sign going like 50, 70 miles an hour or whatever, hit a guy on a motorcycle, killed him, got convicted for manslaughter, got convicted of manslaughter. He's out of jail after 100 days, you know? Kills a guy, he's going to get out and walk. You know, he's a powerful person, though. Everybody knows him. Bill's a good man. All he does is kill people when he's driving. He's a good Republican. So anyway, hey, thanks for joining me. Thanks for Louise for running the show. Thanks for all of you for listening. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. Tom will be back tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You've been
been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you, people who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWI.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.